and do the things I want. You think you got the best of me, think you've had the last laugh, but you think that everything good is gone. Think you left me broken down, think that I'll come running back. Baby, you don't know me, cause you're dead wrong. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Stand a little taller, doesn't mean I'm lonely when I'm alone. What doesn't kill you makes a fighter. What steps even lighter, doesn't mean I'm over, cause you're gone. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger, stronger. Just me, myself, and I. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Stand a little taller, doesn't mean I'm lonely when I'm alone.
All right, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for joining me, your host, Kirk Dillon, for this, the inaugural episode of the Veritas 7 Daily Show, what we call Murder, Mystery, and Malfeasance, where we're going to go over every night, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. I'm going to bring to you headlines that have to deal with true crime all around the country. The most macabre, the most weird, the strangest, in association with our other sister publication, The Veracity Report. We're going to be bringing you this live show, Murder, Mystery, and Malfeasance, every day for 30 minutes, just to keep you abreast on what's going on in the world in the genre of true crime. So that being said, sit back, relax, and buckle your seatbelts, America, because Veritas means truth, and the daily truth starts now.
Stand a little taller, doesn't mean I'm lonely when I'm alone. Doesn't kill you, makes you stronger. Stand a little taller, doesn't mean I'm lonely when I'm alone. What doesn't kill you makes a fighter. What steps even lighter, doesn't mean I'm over, cause you're gone. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger, stronger. Just me, myself, and I. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
Tonight, I want to welcome, I have with me April Hill, I have Matt Sloniker, I have Danny Lott, and I have Gina Nisanoff. Also, Jennifer Falk is with me tonight for this inaugural episode. So we're going to get right to it without wasting any time. First tonight, we're going to talk about Operation Sneaky Peach. If you never heard about that, don't let that dissuade you, because I didn't either until just a little while ago. The Georgia Bureau of Investigation, in association with numerous other agencies, created a task force in the state of Georgia, which is obviously called the Peach State. And because it's close to home for me, since I'm based out of Atlanta, I wanted to bring this to you because of the incredible results that they had. Operation Sneaky Peach was launched about 3 months ago, and it was basically an effort where they were going to what they call the Georgia Internet Crimes Against Children, or the ICAC task force, that was comprised of all of these local and federal agencies banded together to find people who were exploiting children, trying to sell sexual content of minors, and all that other kind of stuff. And they really had a lot of success with it. So they just today announced the results of the arrests. After serving all the search warrants and other actions, they arrested 31 individuals. A total of 31 people were taken off the street. They seized 296 electronic devices, and some of them were, they included cell phones, tablets, computers, hard drives, and other various electronic media storage devices. Throughout the task force, they identified 30 children. That's incredible. That's almost three dozen, 30 children that were residing in households around the state of Georgia where online sexual child exploration was occurring. So basically child sex trafficking was occurring in these houses. Four of those that were arrested during this thing, believe it or not, were children themselves. So you had minors, 16 and 17 and 15-year-old kids that were involved in the trafficking of younger kids. That's just incomprehensible. What has to happen in a child's life at 15 years old to think it's okay to basically, disseminate 7 and 8 year olds and 10 year olds and sexual content on the internet and selling, live FaceTime chats and all. I mean, crazy, crazy stuff. This is a list. Now I'm going to read you a list of all the people who were arrested as a result today of Operation Sneaky Peach. Number one, Randy Ho, 22 years old, of Forest Park, Clayton County, Georgia. Number two, Zachary Mitchell Allen, 40 years old, of DeKalb County, Georgia. Number three, Russell Somerville, age 38, of Athens, that's Clark County, Georgia. Number four, William Ellis, age 33, of Cleveland, that's White County, Georgia. Jeffrey Lynn, age 51, of Rossville, that's Walker County, Georgia. Number six is Michael Bean, spelled B-E-A-N-E, 58 years old, of Waycross, that's Ware County, Georgia. Number seven is James Lail, that's L-A-I-L, age 48, of Macon, Jones County, Georgia. Number eight, Jeremy Gunn, age 33, of Fayetteville, that's Fayette County, Georgia. Number nine is Douglas Strong, age 64, of Auburn, that's Barrow County, Georgia. Number 10 is Benny House, age 35, of East Ellijay, that's Gilmer County, Georgia. Number 11 is Thaddeus Anderson, age 34, of Canton, that's Cherokee County, Georgia. Number 12 is Jimmy Evans, age 65, of Milledgeville, that's Baldwin County. Number 13, Paul Angel, 70 years old, out of Danielsville, Madison County, Georgia. That's 70, believe it or not. Trent Bailey is number 14, age 33, out of Hartwell, that's Hart County, Georgia. Number 15 is Brian Jones, age 38, out of Roopville, that's Heard County, Georgia. Number 16 is Ethan Cook, age 18, out of Canton, that's Cherokee County, Georgia. Number 17 is Carl Hill, age 42, out of Cartersville, that's Bartow County. 18 is Damian Wright, age 22, of Ackworth, that's also Bartow County. Number 19 is Dustin Borer, age 39, of St. Simons Island, that's in Glynn County, Georgia. Carrie William Wiley Lewis is number 20 on the list, age 35, of Savannah, that's Chatham County, Georgia. Number 21 is Christopher Williams, age 37, of Hinesville, that's Liberty County, Georgia. Number 22 is Kieran Michael O'Connor, age 31, of Hinesville, also, that's again Liberty County. Number 23, Trevius Murrell, age 35, of Americus, that's Sumter County. Number 24 is Jesse Kelly, age 31, of Talking Rock, that's Pickens County. And number 25 is David Latta, that's L-A-T-T-A. He's 52 years old, out of Lawrenceville, that's Gwinnett County. In addition to those people that I just mentioned, one offender was a minor and was served with a juvenile complaint, and more arrests may be forthcoming. The task force wanted us to put out there that more arrests may be forthcoming as the investigation proceeds and they dig more into the information that was stored on all of those computer devices that they seized in today's raids. Also, we want to give thanks to the following Georgia ICAC task force affiliate agencies that participated and made Operation Sneaky Peach not only happen, but made it successful. That's the Athens County, the Athens Clark County Police Department, the Bartow County Sheriff's Office, the Bryan County Sheriff's Office, the Candler County Sheriff's Office, the Camden County Sheriff's Office, the Cherokee County Sheriff's Office, the Fayette County Sheriff's Office, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the FBI, the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, the GBI, Georgia State Patrol, that's the Georgia State Police, Gilmer County Sheriff's Office, the Gwinnett County Police Department, Gwinnett County Sheriff's Department, Hall County Sheriff's Office, Heard County Sheriff's Office, Homeland Security, the Houston County Sheriff's Office, Jones County Sheriff's Office, the Naval Criminal Investigative Service, that's right, the real NCIS was in on it, Polk County Police Department, the Richmond County Sheriff's Office, the Rincon Police Department, St. Mary's Police Department, and the United States Secret Service. So we want to just take our hats off to all those people and for what a reigning success. We'll obviously keep you up to date here on the Daily Report as we go forward in this, as indictments and plea bargains and all that good stuff happens. But thank you because of the efforts of these fine people, 30 people are off the street now that were engaging in child sex trafficking just right here in my state. So we're definitely really happy about that.
I want to say those people are true life heroes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. God knows what one thing that wasn't in any of the what they relayed, other than the 30 that were found in this investigation. We can't even put a number on the countless children in the future that would have been victimized that have now been saved because these people are off the street. So that you can easily add a zero onto the back of that 30 if these people had gone unchecked and had been able to keep perpetrating this in perpetuity. So definitely, again, hats off to all of the agencies and officers, the dedicated men and women of all of those agencies that helped make that possible. Next case we want to cover tonight. You know, a lot of you have already heard about the Gilgo Beach murderer. That's also close to my heart because I spent a lot of my formative years there on Long Island after I grew up and after I graduated high school. I moved to Long Island and I lived right around there. As a matter of fact, way back in the day, I used to be the store manager of a Blockbuster Video. I know I'm dating myself now. Years and years ago, I was the store manager of Blockbuster Video in Copaig, which is the bordering town to Massapequa Park, where this monster lived. If in fact he ends up being found guilty, we don't want to convict him before he's had an opportunity to face trial by a jury of his peers or accept a plea bargain. Right now it's only alleged that he's committed these crimes, but the evidence is pretty strong. So it's kind of leaning that way and looking like he's going to be found guilty, at least for the murders of the three that he's already charged with. What brings this back into the news today, however, is unrelated to that now. There are widespread reports being sent out by media that he's also connected. His name is Rex Huerman, by the way. It's spelled Huerman. Rex there is the one who's now the accused Gilgo Beach serial killer that started his reign of terror back in the around 2010. He's now under investigation for a missing woman named Julia Ann Bean, who was last seen alive May 31st of 2017 here in Sumter County, Georgia. Her daughter had reported her missing on November the 18th of 2017, and she said that she believes that her mother was actually seen with Rex the last time she saw her. Now, you all know, if you've listened to our podcast, the Veritas 7 True Crime Podcast, I say this all the time, something's still not right here. Julia Ann Bean was last seen alive on May 31st of 2017, but here in the same report, her daughter didn't report her missing until November 18th of the same year. In case all of you aren't too fast at wanting to do that math in your head, that's about 7 months. So her daughter was missing from May, or the end of May, the beginning of June of 2017, until the middle of November, right around Thanksgiving, before somebody realized mom is not showing up or calling or texting. Listen, everybody's family dynamic is a little bit different. But I know when my mom was alive, I would never imagine going 6 months without a text message and realizing that something is wrong. So I'm certainly not trying to play favoritism or give Rex here the benefit of the doubt. But the bottom line is, I find this woman's account to be skeptical, at least. I'm leery of taking her word at face value for anybody whose mother could be missing for 6 months before you call the cops. I mean, what do you guys think? Could any of you imagine not talking to your parent for 6 months unless you're completely estranged from them?
I mean, my family isn't very... We talk when we need to. That might be 2 months. That might be 3 months. I don't know about if we've ever really gone 6 months. Like, I haven't really... I don't talk to my sister like that, you know. But, I mean, for me, it wouldn't be that weird, I guess. I don't know. I don't know why it just wouldn't be that weird. I believe I watched something about this guy. Wasn't he a mortician, or was that the guy before him?
No, that was another. That's another guy. This guy Rex. He's an architect. He was an architect in New York City.
Okay.
And he had built a lot of things and done a lot of stuff on Long Island. Him and his wife lived in that same house for over 20 years. And when the cops served the search warrant, they were in there. They basically evicted his wife and his kid. And they even brought his cats to a kill shelter. And they took 12 days to basically dismantle the house and strip it down to studs in certain areas. And they found the torture chamber in his basement. So that was hidden, you know. And that's,
sounds
you know,
like
that's another question that I have with that case. We'll talk about him a little more in depth. But I mean, being the wife, this is a good question for you ladies that are in on the show. Could you imagine living in a house with your husband for 20 years and not knowing there's a secret room in the basement?
I no. No, that I could not. The family I could get not talking to family for 6 months, but that might be a little difficult.
I mean, I get it. You know, it might be the man cave or whatever the case may be, but I have
I'm still going in there. Yes.
Yeah, I have a man cave. My wife still comes in, though. Imagine me trying to tell my wife, you can't come in my man cave. Like that's...
Oh, no, that ain't going to fly.
Yeah.
At all. Yeah.
So just real weird scenarios around this case, things that don't really make sense. And they're probably never going to go out of their way to elaborate on these little details that I find odd and makes the whole thing stink, like something about it just doesn't ring true. Keep in mind now, they got this guy. They only ever identified this guy by getting his DNA off of a piece of pizza crust. So they did genealogical DNA on a piece of pizza crust that was 10 years old, and they got a profile for his cousin, and then through his cousin, they tracked him down and realized that it was him. So that's what pointed the finger at this guy in the first place, was his saliva on a 10-year-old piece of pizza crust.
Can't trust nobody. Can't trust anybody. Can't trust anybody, not even your cousin.
Yeah, exactly. If he had just stayed out of jail, you know, this guy never would have got caught.
Yep.
So real crazy. But anyway, real odd. We're definitely going to spend a little bit more time on this case as a whole, going over what he's accused of, what he's not yet charged with, what he is charged with, and the evidence that they have, and all that other kind of stuff. So we're definitely going to do that in a future episode of The Daily Show. So you definitely want to stay tuned to Murder, Mystery, and Malfeasance, the Veritas 7 Daily Show, in the future for updates on all the cases that we cover as new information becomes available. The next case we're going to talk about tonight is one that's another one that's near and dear to everybody's heart. Everybody remembers the mass shooting, of course, at the school in Texas in Uvalde some time ago. Well, the school is back in the news again. Fortunately, not for another active shooter scenario. But now the mayor of Uvalde, his name is Don McLaughlin, he's actually suing the district attorney of the county there. Her name is Christina Mitchell. This is the second time he's suing her, trying to force her to resign or to be fired for obstruction of his investigation as to what happened on that day. Apparently, he's wanting to get video and audio and eyewitness testimony of people that were involved and that were there that day to help ferret out how he's going to discipline the police officers that waited 77 minutes after the calls to 911 of an active shooter scenario in the school to actually enter the school. So he's trying to prosecute that. The DA is trying to just prosecute the other, who might be culpable in the crime other than the kid that obviously got killed, the maniac that went in there and did it. So they have, believe it or not, you know, we're all supposed to be on the same team. They're both supposedly investigating the same crime, but each one clearly has a very, very separate and unique agenda in this case. And it really, really sucks if this in any way is going to hinder justice being done on any of these cases. Really, really crazy to look at. But he's basically saying that he needs the video, the body cam footage of the officers and all that other kind of stuff to see who's culpable, who's not culpable, and who he can eliminate, charging, whatever the case may be. And she's not coming off any of that. She insists she's not going to release any of that information until she's done with her investigation and whoever's going to be prosecuted is prosecuted, and that's it. And, you know, you got statute of limitations that are running and all kinds of crazy stuff. I don't know specifically what the statute of limitations are in Texas on this type of crime. Keep in mind, this isn't, murder has no statute of limitations, but none of these people that are under investigation now are really charged with murder. Maybe some of her people that she's investigating might be charged with manslaughter or criminally negligent homicide or something of that nature. But obviously the active shooter in this scenario is the only one that faced first-degree murder charges that has no statute of limitation, and he's dead. The police eventually shot and killed him, but not until he took out 19 of his fellow students there in the school because officers refused to engage and enter the building earlier in an effort to try and thwart him. So we will definitely keep you up to date on that scenario as all that comes out. Now, April and Matt, you guys live in Texas. Have you heard anything more on the local news that's a little bit more in depth about that?
I have not. I'm going to be honest. I haven't been keeping up with it.
Okay.
Yeah, I haven't either. I'm kind of trying to stay away from that whole thing, man. It's just so sad and so heartbreaking. And I just imagine being one of the parents of those kids, and I can't really wrap my mind around it.
Yeah.
So when something pops up, I'm not like, ooh, let me read it. You know what I mean?
Right. And that's the thing about this show and our podcast, the Veritas 7 True Crime Podcast, and the Veracity Report at veracityreport.org. We are friends of law enforcement. We are friends of the court. We are friends of the system. We want to see justice served. If you're innocent, we want to make sure that we help prove you innocent. If you're guilty, we want to make sure you go away for a long, long time. This is one of those cases for me personally, too, where as much as I want to support law enforcement and all of that, anybody from the outside looking in can see that there's epic failures here. There were epic failures on the date of the shooting. There are epic failures now in the investigation and the prosecutions after the fact. Fortunately, in these investigations, nobody's life is in danger as a result of the malfeasance or the misconduct. But that doesn't make it any less that doesn't make it any more flavorful for the rest of us that have to sit back and watch these law enforcement professionals that have dedicated their lives to serving truth and justice and the American way and all of that good stuff, to squabbling with each other, fighting, suing each other, trying to get the other one fired. And what your investigation is stepping on my investigation. There really has to be a way that law enforcement comes together and works with each other in a way that's acceptable for everybody, and everybody gets the job done. So that's all I want to say on that for now. But we will, of course, keep you up to date on this story and all of these stories as they develop. Okay, next, we are going to go and we are going to talk about this is a really another really growing trend that's disturbing. Another female teacher in Hamilton County, Tennessee. Another female teacher, 28-year-old Casey McGrath, has now been arrested and charged with aggravated statutory rape of a student in her class between the ages of 13 and 18. I mean, we're really seeing a lot more of this now. You know, for the longest time, it's always been teachers molesting students, and that's nothing new. It's been going on since the world's been turning, probably, or since there's been classrooms and teachers and authority figures and whatever. But there's a real growing trend now for female teachers to be doing it. This never used to be that much of a thing, or at least it never got a lot of traction in the news. I'm not saying it never happened, but this, we're hearing about it more and more. Hardly a month passes now without another female teacher getting arrested and charged with statutory rape for having unauthorized sex with her students. You know, a few years back, we had the one that wasn't a few years back. It was like 20 years back. But about 20 years ago, we had the one where, you know, she actually got pregnant from the boy, 15 years old, student of hers. What's that?
Letourneau.
Yeah, Letourneau. Right. So, I mean, just really, really, you know, we're hearing about this more and more now. There was another one that just happened a couple of weeks ago, and now this one here in Tennessee. In this case, this Ms. McGrath here had been under investigation since April on suspicion of having inappropriate contact of a sexual nature with at least one of her students. So she was put on administrative leave, but on paid administrative leave. So she's basically been sitting at home getting a paycheck since April while they've investigated this case. And now the investigation is over, and effectively now she's been arrested, formally charged, and the school board has made the public announcement that she's no longer employed by the school district. So she's actually now finally been fired. She was arrested, and the charge on her is aggravated statutory rape of a child between the ages of 13 and 18 without doing harm, it says. So I don't know how you have aggravated basically sexual battery of a minor and it doesn't do any harm, how that works out in the verbiage of the statute. I don't know, but you know, it is what it is.
The ick factor on this one is like 8 million times. I can't. Yeah. With these people, I really just think that a lot more people are getting caught. First of all, why did it take them 4 months? Why did it take them 4 months to investigate this broad? I'm sorry. It's very simple. You know, you
either did or you didn't.
Exactly. And trust and believe, there were breadcrumbs laid far in advance of that. So I'm sorry, there's no reason it should have been 4 months of her getting paid sitting on her duff at home. And I just, that appalls me, the fact that it took them 4 months to investigate. How deep did you really have to investigate?
Yeah.
It doesn't take them that long to do a background check for employment with the county.
Yeah.
You know, there's how is it that it takes you longer to figure out whether somebody did something or not? I just don't understand it. And a federal government bureaucracy can go through a background check and figure out whether they want to hire someone, yes or no, within a couple of weeks. Makes zero sense. It's ridiculous. And I really, honestly, it was one of those things where, like, that one girl who was a teacher and got in trouble and pled to the court, "I'm too pretty for jail." That one.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that blonde? I'm too pretty for jail. Honey, you did it. Have fun.
Yeah. Just wild, wild. So, yeah, that's, I mean, another thing, obviously, we'll keep you up to date as the process goes. I don't know. I didn't read if she made bail or what her bail is. But I imagine I don't know what kind of, I don't know if she's married. I don't know too much of her background. They didn't release a heck of a lot of information. And I just got this story about 2 hours ago. So I haven't, while I was getting prepping to do the show, I got a news flash about this. So I haven't had a chance to do a lot of background on her yet. But in tomorrow's episode, I'll have a little bit more information on her status as far as, is she staying in jail? Was she denied bail? Was she given bail? Did she make it? Who bailed her out? Is she married? You know, her husband is sticking by her, or is he, you know, filing for divorce already?
Well, now that they're going through the motions of actually firing her from the job, all that stuff will start coming out. But I mean, really, honestly, just like if she was a guy and he preyed on a young girl in high school, both of, you know, male or female, you just took, I don't care how innocent or not this child was in it, it's still a child. And you're an adult, and I'm sorry, but you need to not be let out on bail. I'm a firm supporter of throw the book at him.
Yeah. Yeah. That's crazy. All right. And our last case for tonight, we move to Mount Washington, Kentucky, where the FBI got reports and conducted an investigation where they believed that a man under the name of William Burks, that's what they thought his name was actually selling human body parts on Facebook Marketplace. That's right, folks. You can't make this stuff up. I was joking with some of the production assistants while we were going through this before the case, getting ready for it, for the show. How do you search for that? I mean, I would like to know, how in the world do you search for human body parts on Facebook? I can't imagine.
I can't imagine it either. Where
was he getting the body parts?
Kind of all over the place. I did just find out, by the way, that she did make bail, so she is out. So yeah, I went back to the case we were just working on. I did just find out now that she made bail. I
want to know if he listed those body parts as organic.
Right? I believe that he was getting them on some kind of a deal from a mortuary or a funeral director somewhere around by where he was. Don't quote me on that because I'm not 100% sure yet, but I'm pretty sure that was his connect for how he was getting the body parts. But when the FBI went in and they served the search warrant on his house, they first asked him when they brought him out, is there anybody else in the house? And he said, just some friends of my dad. So that's really.
First question is, how many personalities does your dad have? And if there's none, then it's kind of, you're supposed to go more into that. But yeah, friends of my dad.
Yeah.
Do you normally kill your friends?
Yeah.
And collect their bones?
And I have a question. We have our resident coroner with us here. I want to introduce everybody to Dakota Bloyd. He's a coroner there in Arkansas, and also he's worked in Texas. He does a lot of crime scene investigations. He's going to be new with us on our main podcast. So Dakota, welcome. It's really good to have you today. I just want to ask, if you have a minute, do you think that this guy, he had to be getting these bones already skeletonized, right? Because I can imagine if he was like killing these people and these bodies were decomposing in the house, that whole neighborhood must have stunk to high heaven, no?
Chance of him already purchasing those skeletonized was probably pretty high where he was obtaining them from. The that many bodies at one time decomposing, that smell would be extremely strong. I'm not sure if he lived in a suburban neighborhood or in the country, but it would definitely be a noticeable smell that would have law enforcement there pretty quickly. So I know that it is actually a lot easier to obtain human remains than people would think. There are several websites online that you can actually purchase real human remains from. Most come from medical schools, retired specimens. And it is legal to own human remains in every state except Tennessee, Louisiana, and Georgia. So him having them is not necessarily illegal. It's just where he obtained them from.
Right. Well, and he lived in Tennessee, so I guess it was. Or no, he lived in Kentucky. I'm sorry. So, yeah, you're right. Wow. I didn't even know that. That's great. That's great input. Really good to know that you can own. Thank God not in my state.
So around Halloween, there's a pretty good chance it might be a real skeleton from your local cemetery.
If you're not in what are the states again, Dakota?
It was Tennessee, Louisiana, and Georgia.
Wow.
Cool.
Okay.
Arizona's not one of them. I'm going to get one.
Oh, my. Oh, my. So anyway, when the FBI served the warrant on this guy's house, they found 40 skulls. That's not an exaggeration. That's not a typo. I didn't misspeak. 40. They found 40 skulls. The best, some of them, the bodies, they found spines, they found femurs, they found hip joints, and some of these bones were arranged and used as furniture in the house.
Oh.
So he actually had, like, people chairs. Or,
I mean,
coffee table. I don't know.
Was it Ed Gein who had flesh or skin lampshades?
Yes, yeah, and he had the shrunken heads and the crawl space under his house and all. Yeah, that's, yeah. I mean, just wow. Yeah, just insane.
They could have gotten into business.
Yeah, absolutely. His real name is James Knotts, by the way, Notts, and he was selling them on Facebook under the alias William Burks. So if you see any Facebook ads by William Burks, don't walk, run, folks, run. Because, yeah, that's not a skeleton that he bought at Party City. So that's going to do it, everybody, for this first episode of The Daily Show, Murder, Mystery, and Malfeasance, with me, your host, Kurt Dillon. I want to thank everybody who was with us tonight. I want to thank Jennifer Falk. I want to thank Gina Nissenoff. I definitely want to thank our coroner, Dakota Bloyd. I want to thank Matt Sloniker, April Hill, Danny Lott, and Stephanie and Steph Clark. Thank you all for this great episode. Look forward to doing this with you every night for 30 minutes. So we hope you'll tune in. We also want to thank our sister publication, The Veracity Port. For those of you that want true crime, absolutely go to our website, theveritas7.com, and check out our podcast, The Veritas 7 True Crime Podcast. But also, if you want any other kind of news that is not true crime related, go to our sister publication, theveracityreport.org, where we have all of that information for you on everything from sports to politics to you name it. The Veracity Report takes care of that for you. So for me, your host, Kurt Dillon, I want to thank you all. Have a great night. Take care. God bless. We'll talk to you soon.